Do you want to find solutions that help teams make better decisions, solve problems faster, and free their creative minds to come up with smarter solutions? There's a workshop for that. Bonjour, I'm Nati Ravez, and I'm delighted to welcome to this show facilitators and experts who share their knowledge and experience of everything you need to know in the world of facilitation, giving you tips and tools for leading groups, sparking collaboration, and driving innovation. Thank you for tuning in, and let's go.
Hello, everybody. Hello. I'm very happy to welcome in this new episode of There's the Workshops for That, someone whose work has truly captured my attention, Thomas Lantala. I'm a fan of his profile on LinkedIn. It's a treasure trove of insights. His posts encourage us facilitators to ask meaningful questions and reflect deeply on our practice, and I really love that, and I love the way you do this with the little post-its. Thomas describes himself as someone at the intersection of human behavior, social dynamics, and transformation, helping companies, leaders, and change managers navigate uncertainty in today's changing landscapes. He will tell us more about that. But that's not all. Thomas is an unconventional thinker. He speaks, he say his opinion, and he tell it in different ways. Also has a TEDx speaker and an author who aims to provoke new ideas and inspire fresh reflections in our approach to facilitation. I welcome here in the show Thomas Lantala directly from Norway. Hi, Thomas.
Hi, Nati. Thanks for having me and thanks for this nice introduction.
I would love to start straight away because I'm sure you have a very, very interesting journey. And my first question in this podcast is always to find out what is the background of my guest and how did you come into facilitation?
A very, very broad question, I think. But the journeys, you're right, the journeys are always kind of what makes us today. My journey started a long time ago in Austria. My professional journey is originally conflict work. So I've studied peace and conflict resolution. I have later on been a mediator, worked a lot with the topic of conflict. And then as life goes, it's taken me away from Austria, and it started in South Africa now almost 20 years ago as an internship. Still the best job that I've ever had until today. I traveled small villages in South Africa to meet community mediators and look at their work and had a chance to chat with them on their practices, which deeply influences also, of course, my work, my worldview. And from then on, it was just a very direct way into development work, humanitarian work. So I worked in a lot of contexts that you read in the news about that often are crisis and conflict prone over long periods of time. And I became a crisis manager and later on led crisis teams in that. And that was kind of, I did facilitation for all of that without knowing it. And later on, when I had started a family, I had to change my priorities. I moved away from that sector and that work, which was very painful in many ways because it's very rewarding and purposeful. And I tried to translate my learnings, my insights into different sectors in capacity development, competency development. So I do a lot of facilitation advice and always with that angle of transformation, change and uncertainty, which was for the first 10, 12 years of my career, my context. And when I called myself a facilitator the first time, I think this was now 7-8 years ago, but I never really had the mindset of being a facilitator. I think it's just something that evolved because I've done it all the time. And now looking back at my whole career, I think it's been an element of whatever I did.
It means that facilitation for you is a combination of everything that you learned during your journey. And why did you start to call you a facilitator?
So facilitation for me is all about people. So it's not so much about tools, it's not so much about process, it's all about navigating dynamics between mm-hmm. people in different contexts, in different settings. And for that, we can use tool or we can use other things. But it comes with a lot of uncertainty because you never know what happens when people come together. So this is kind of where I use my expertise. And for me, facilitation is in a way something that you can do professionally, like we do. But I think facilitation is also that a lot of people do without even knowing it. They don't call themselves facilitators, but they still work with people on a daily basis. I think facilitation is a key ingredient of leadership. And so it's somewhere everywhere. But people like us, we call ourselves professional facilitators because this is kind of what we do mainly. This is the focus where we actually put our work on. Yeah.
You've been a mediator in the past. What is the difference between a mediator and a facilitator?
I think it's a lot the mandate. I think facilitators often talk about working with conflict, which is something I'm very critical of, and also outspoken critical, because I think we don't have the mandate to work with conflicts as facilitators, because conflicts are a very delicate thing, and if you've studied and worked with conflict topics, you understand that goes a lot deeper than what facilitation often does. Because conflicts they have their roots in really our deepest needs, and even in concepts like autonomy, which as facilitators we should not be tackling directly, because that is also an overfocus on one party, and it would also be really going outside the mandate that we have. So for me, first and foremost, the mandate is the difference, but also the role that we are then taking. Because as a facilitator, I really clearly have as a mediator, I clearly have a defined role between the conflict parties and me. As a facilitator, that role, that it is a bit more like a dance. It's a bit more navigating whatever is needed at that point in time. As a facilitator, I can use some of the tools, but I have a very clearly established relationship with both my parties.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think are the main ingredients a facilitator should have to become a great facilitator?
Self-reflection. You said it in the beginning. I'm a huge fan of self-reflection, because I think we underestimate how important it is that we know ourselves in this process, because facilitation is not something that you do. You go in and you do it and you go out again. It affects us equally while we're there. It affects us afterwards and also before. So there's a lot of things going on inside us that potentially triggers things we experience, our own experiences that feed into this. And I think that awareness is, for me, one of the crucial things for facilitators to have. Also, I think the understanding of human dynamics, and that can be through observation, that can be through, of course, reading, but I always encourage people, like, the best way to learn facilitation is actually doing it. There's a lot of courses and a lot of books and everything, they're all great, but I think nothing beats really throwing yourself out there and experiencing what it means to be in a group, what dynamics play out, how you can see the individual and the group simultaneously. And so those are the things that I would point out immediately.
Yes, of course. I really think that practice is the best way to learn how to do that. But if you have no clue what it is, or you have heard about this, for example, I was a project manager and I was just looking for methods to get a group of completely different people, department of engineer, a department of purchaser, a department of technicians, and I had really the problem that everyone wanted to work on a project, but in their own lens. And I wanted to find method to how bring them together. So this is why I took a course, because when you absolutely not know how to start with this, what would you give for advice how to start with this when you, of course, you need to practice, but do you think there is a starting point you could have, a good starting point, a book, I don't know?
I think it really depends on what type of person you are. I mean, there's now great courses out there. The only challenge that I have with these courses is that it's very often about a simple answer to what facilitation is, and I think there is not really a simple answer to it. So as long as you go into this course with, this is one perspective that I'm being taught, and from that on, and that perspective might give me a sense of stability, security, a starting point, then all for it. If you go into a course and say, like, I will learn what facilitation is because of that one course, I think that's dangerous, because you're limiting yourself, actually. You're thinking, like, okay, that's the one way to approach this. But there's so many different ways to approach this, and a lot of it is also connected to how you show up as a person, mm-hmm. what you bring to the table. Our stories are all different. I believe everybody is a facilitator, and I believe also everybody can be a professional facilitator if they wanted to, but for that we have to look into our stories. What do they bring? What is it that we like to do? What is it that we actually good at? What gives us a sense of purpose, right? So these things are all important to reflect over. And those, if they're stimulated for a course, is great. And also, as you say, tools, methods, processes, those are fun to learn in courses. But the question, like, what is facilitation, I think will not be answered in a course, because I think people have to answer that for themselves. It's kind of an umbrella term that leaves a lot of space underneath to find out what's my way in it, and how am I actually tackling that, and how do I want to live facilitation.
Yeah, is it about finding your own style, even if you have a few methods, but you need to come out from who you are, what you've learned on your own journey, what skills you have, what personality you have, and then try to find, what do I want to facilitate and which kind of facilitator I want to be?
Absolutely. Because it's if you and I would do the same method with the same group of people, it mm-hmm. would look very different. Because you have a very different way of approaching facilitation, which is unique to you, mm-hmm. which makes you show up in the situation, which you put emphasis probably on different things. You read the group maybe differently than I do, and that all translates into how we work with them. So that's the uniqueness in all the facilitation is exactly where, for me, the paradox lies, right? So we try to kind of find a common definition and what is facilitation, but we're all so unique that this is difficult, and this is also where the beauty lies. We're so unique. So I'm not able to facilitate every group. I'm technically able, but I'm not the right fit for every group, and that's the same for every other facilitator, because my signature needs to shine, and signature, I talk a lot about that, is something that is very, very important that we all know about when we work with facilitation, because that's the combination of our uniqueness. It's a bit like our actual physical signature. They all look different, right? And they also all evolve, because my signature from 20 years ago looks very different from my signature today. And same is with facilitation. It just evolves over time. And if you sit down and actually look at, oh, wow, there are things that have evolved. There is experience in there. There's things I see differently now. I think that makes you really grow as a facilitator and as a person.
Yes, absolutely. I really think you have your own backpack, where you have not only what you've learned in your professional way or on your educational journey, it's also what you've learned in life. I'm traveling right now since a few months, and I try to really look into the difference of culture, into the difference of reaction of people. Right now I'm in Asia. People are thinking completely differently when they are really thinking in community. It's deep inside their mind. And in Europe, it's more, we are thinking as a single person. So I think that through this, my way of facilitating and my way of reading the people becomes different. So your style is also growing with what you learn on your way, right?
Absolutely, I think you're given a gift with that, because yes, facilitation is also very culturally dependent. Because I learned facilitation not in classrooms or from courses, which doesn't mean, again, doesn't make it a bad thing, but just my entry point to this was different. And I actually also worked in regions where you are now and others, where facilitation is such a normal part to life that people don't even reflect over what they're doing, like community meetings, or I had the privilege to be together with indigenous peoples during rituals and similar things. They're all facilitated, but they're facilitated very differently from what, for example, maybe some facilitators in our parts, or where I am now, since you're sitting on the other side of the world, but in the Western parts, what they would say is facilitation, because it's completely emergent. there's very little structure. There's no predefined process in that sense. It's a bit like we're all coming together and we're just navigating whatever comes out of this. And there's no right or wrong. Both approaches are their approaches, but they need to coexist. They need to have the space, because if you put them together, if you get a glimpse into this one and a glimpse into that one, that's just, it's an incredible gift, because it will help you grow. It will expand your toolbox. It will expand your vision, and it gives you a lot more choice to, where do I fit in this spectrum here? Where's my position, and what do I like and what do I not like? And that's completely okay also to exclude things. We don't have to like everything.
Yeah, absolutely. Could you share some practical steps or advice for facilitators looking to identify and refine their own facilitation signature? You talked already about self-reflection is one of the things. What are some other practical things?
Self-reflection is the other side to also get external perspectives, for example, because they might not always match. Right, I might have a specific perspective about myself, but that is maybe also biased to who I would like to be, or to who I was told as a kid that who I am. Right, maybe it's not even true anymore. So how do other people see you? I think that's important. Another thing is just really, really work yourself out in terms of what is actually my dream client, and who do I like to work with, and who do I not like to work with. And that is more often for people that become self-independent, and you have now a course coming up for transitioning into this business. So I'm sure you will talk a lot about that. But one of the tricky things with facilitation is often to say no. It's like, no, because I do not want to work with that client for several reasons. They might not pay enough. They might actually take a lot more of the time that we agreed to. They might not have the values. And those are all things that help you clarify yourself. These simple reflections about, like, yeah, what do I actually want to do? Is there a simple format that I want to facilitate? Is there a simple style? Because often signature is reduced to style, but style is just one part of it. There's so many others, the backpack that we just talked about. So it's really about these conversations, these reflections, these learnings. And you can do this when working with groups already. You can find out a bit like, so how do they see me? How does it feel? Or you can do this really in retrospect, and say, like, so yeah, if I look back at my career, this is what I learned from it.
And what I can give and what I feel comfortable to go with, right?
The trick is the comfort. And the comfort zone is something very interesting, because I think in order to evolve and to really get clarity, we need to leave it. But not everything that we say is uncomfortable is actually really just uncomfortable, because discomfort is also such an umbrella term. Underneath, the things feel different. Sometimes when we feel discomfort, it might be because we were afraid of something. Another time, it might be because we were very stressed. A third time, it might be because we don't really know what's coming next. And those are all very different feelings. So don't get stuck on, it's just uncomfortable. Figure out what it actually is that makes it uncomfortable and how it feels, because that gives you, again, insights on where you want to move and where you rather want to stay away from.
Absolutely. I just think about some facilitators who are reaching out to me because they don't feel they want to do that, because they discover this as a passion, maybe not have a lot of experience, and I don't feel confident to go and facilitate. And I try to tell them, if you don't facilitate, you will not become a facilitator, and you will not find out what you like and what you don't like, right?
It's a catch-22. It becomes a catch-22, right? If you don't do it, you won't learn it. And if you don't learn it, you don't feel like you can do it. So it's a bit,
Yeah, it's a little bit a circle. Absolutely.
If you'd like to receive even more valuable information about facilitation, exercise templates, news about upcoming events or podcasts, spotlights on facilitator we admire, and eventually discount vouchers for retreats, courses, or tools, then you should subscribe to our Pinky newsletter, La Workshoppeuse Gazette. The link is in the show notes.
When we talk about signature workshop, I know you have different kind of signature workshop on your website. Can you tell me a little bit about your signature workshop?
The signature workshop that we're doing is also for facilitators. It's together with Miriam Hodnes, that's certainly many of your listeners know who he is.
Mm-hmm.
We are running one again in September. We did one last year in October, also in Amsterdam. We're running it again this year in Amsterdam in person, 2-day workshop. From 13th of September to 15th of September. And the idea there is really to have a 2-day with us, but also with the other facilitators present, to really sharpen your signature. So it's about, you have already a little bit of experience, you do want to kind of clearer communicate to the outside, who am I as a facilitator? So what is it that makes, or why should people work with me? That's maybe the interesting question here, and we look into that, and we have kind of designed a workshop around that, which was really insightful also for us facilitator last year. The ones Miriam and I who ran it, we learned a lot in those 3 days with the participants, and it's beautiful to see how meanwhile their signatures are shining all over, for example, LinkedIn. That really makes us proud. So yeah, decided to do it again, and hope if you're interested, find us.
Yes, we will put, of course, the link in the show notes. And I know from a past participant, Saeed Sadouk, he was really, really excited about that. And I don't know when it was that he took part, but I think it changed a lot if in his approach to show up outside. So it was like a little transformation. And
he's a perfect example. He's a perfect example of that. It was October last year that it happened. And if you go back on his LinkedIn feed, you will see a change after that. Yeah, it's beautiful to see where he's going and all the amazing things he shares.
He's shining. Hello, Saeed. If you listen to this podcast, we say hello to you. May I ask, with which kind of companies are you working now? And what kind of workshops do you like the most that you're running with these companies?
It's very different. I work a lot with associations at the moment and foundations. So I do a lot of support for the boards of different organizations. That's leadership development primarily. And I like that in the sense, leadership development is just a label. But what I like about these workshops is that they are very free in the sense that I can design and play with concepts, because I like to be disruptive, I like to be challenging, I like to be unconventional. So with these workshops, I have a lot of space, and that's what I really like the most. Predefined workshops, rather rigid workshops that need to be repetitive, I struggle with, because I will always change something. So it's not the same workshop, even if I have to run the same workshop 5 times, it will look different 5 times, because there's learning, it's different people. Every workshop is, for me, a unique experience. So I treat it as that. And don't really have any favorite format or any favorite topic, as long as there's lots of space to explore, to play, and to see what comes up.
Very nice. And we spoke also the last time that you are working on a book, right? I'm allowed to speak about this.
you're allowed to speak about it, of course. It's always tricky writing a book, and then people know that you're writing it, but it's also an important pressure, because you're reminded that you really want to do it. And writing a book is not an easy thing for those of you who've done it. But.
Can you reveal a little bit of what's inside, or what you would like to develop in this book?
Yeah, so it all started with, I've shared facilitation hacks now over the past year and a half on LinkedIn, and I was pushed a bit into, can you not collect all these into a book? And this was the original idea, but whoever knew me and knows me knows that this does mean very little for me, because my ideas just evolve over time. So the book that I'm working on now is really, should be an invitation to reflect our own practices. So it is for anybody who wants to be a facilitator, but also primarily for people who are facilitators already, because it will be provocative. I will lay out the way I think about things, with an invitation to just reflect over what I write. and what do you take away from it or not. And there will, of course, be some tips from my facilitation, but it will primarily be a book that should people help really reflect on, okay, this is me, this is what I do, is there anything I can tweak or not? Because the last thing I want is people, and primarily facilitators, to get stuck on their practices and say, like, this is how I do it, and this is how it needs to be done. Because I think that is not doing themselves a favor, and neither is it to their clients. So that book should be a little bit rattling the cage, and maybe, and there will be a lot of provocative insights in this that people might or might not agree with. It's not about agreeing. It's just about, like, give it a moment to think about it and then move on if it doesn't do anything to you.
Okay, and would you reveal, because you make me curious, of course, when you say it will be provocative, what is a provocative thought, for example, from...
I will just challenge some of the standards, right? So ground rules are one of the topics that I will explore, and I will explain a couple of reasons why I think we should never work with ground rules, and we'll draw some lines into other fields where that might be, where there might be insights on why we shouldn't be doing it, or I will give my critical reflections on the topic of psychological safety, where I think we're discussing it way too superficially, and I think we're very quickly creating a box around it, like, this is how psychological safety should be. Mm-hmm. Having worked in crisis and disaster zones, I've seen so many different shades of psychological safety, which I think we're limiting when we just putting a cage around it. So I think that so those things will be in there to just hope to give new perspectives and a bit of challenges on thinking maybe differently about things.
I can't wait to read this book. I can't wait to read this book, because I'm talking to a few people. You now, I was talking to Jan Keck, for example, a few days ago. And a lot of people give us the feeling that facilitation is only to click some box, you know. You design up, you have to make icebreaker up, you have to set the expectation check, then you have to be sure that the psychological safety is set check. But it's like you really have to understand that it takes much more than that, and that your design, for example, for a workshop, or your way of thinking about how will I draw my story, what the people need to do, it starts way before you design the workshop. You don't have a checklist, it starts with the interviews and all the questions you ask much more before the day of the workshop or the day you design the workshop. So
and then you must not forget that for example, when you talk about the pre-talks of workshops, which you just pointed out is a crucial source of information, we must not forget that often this is a very limited source of information too. So even if you do, for example, individual interviews with all the participants, which I know some facilitators do, you have not seen them together in a group.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very so one is like, yeah, I can have individual conversations with everybody, but that doesn't tell me anything about how they're going to be in a group.
Mm-hmm.
They might show up very differently. So it's almost So you constantly have to be on your toes, right? And really falling into these, and I think you put it beautifully, the boxes that are expected of us to tick is, I think, exactly what I want to work against, because this is so dangerous. It brings so many facilitators in. While they think they're actually protecting themselves and making their own work a lot easier by doing that, I think it brings them in a lot more difficult positions.
Yeah. But when I listen to you talking, I mean, we are not 20, you and me. We have a lot of experience in completely different areas. And of course, this experience, what we have seen in companies, in organizations, whatever, in different countries, set also a certain maturity to read the people, to know what questions to ask, even sometimes you are surprised during a session and you have to adapt. Do you think that a young person coming out from the university can be a facilitator though?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's just about what, first of all, I cannot emphasize enough that I think we're already facilitating. Because if we go out of a professional context, we all have friends, we all have families, and a lot of the skills that we're using as facilitators, we already used and applied there. And there's arguably nothing more complicated than family dynamics. So if you kind of navigate that, you have already very good experience in that. So I think it's never underestimate your own experience. And yeah, sure, you might not have worked professionally as a facilitator with a lot of companies, but that doesn't mean you don't have the skills to do so. And we all started somewhere, sometime. When I think back at my first workshop ever, it was the biggest disaster, the single biggest disaster that I've ever had. But it was also, that made it the single biggest learning experience that I've ever had. It was a 5-day workshop that I approached very clearly with my Western mindset, but it was in rural South Africa, and all of a sudden I had people with disabilities there, and I had people not showing up, and it was like literally, I mean, we could talk 2 hours now about that workshop, but I was just like, I didn't have time to overthink it. I was like, okay, I have to work now with the group to figure something out, and afterwards I sat down and like, what did I learn now? And simply that one workshop, that first workshop, getting over that step to do it and see what comes out, That's a huge learning experience, because it will help you grow. And from that moment on, you will continue to grow. So I believe strongly that everybody can do it. And I also think people should just throw themselves into it.
Thank you so much, Thomas. It was so interesting. I could talk with you for hours.
Yeah.
Really. So, I really think also that young people have a lot to give, because they have grown also in a complete new area than we are, so they can bring some new perspectives, and they have their way to also to navigate groups, to navigate people who are more involved in the remote world from the beginning, for example. And I really think also that everybody can be a facilitator, maybe for different kind of groups on different kind of topics, and that you just need to have the confidence to go with it. So I can't wait for your book. I hope that you will tell me when it comes out.
I will definitely.
Thank you so much. So I will put in the show notes the information concerning the signature workshop, 2 days in Amsterdam, right? In September?
In Amsterdam in September, yeah. Mid-September.
And thank you very much for being my guest today.
Thank you so much for having me. Great question and a conversation. I could also continue. We could probably geek out over facilitation a long time. But we'll continue this conversation surely over the coming months.
Yes, I would be more than happy to welcome you again when the book comes out. Really.
Thank you. Yeah, we'll see. If you still say that then when you read it, but
thank you, Thomas. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
If you enjoyed this episode and want to know more about Thomas, I invite you to connect to his LinkedIn profile. You will get a lot of good questions to ask yourself, a lot of reflection to do. And also, if you're interested to the Facilitation Signature Bootcamp, he will run with Mariam Ednes on the 13th of September 2024. It takes place in Amsterdam, and you will also find the link in the show notes. In the next episode, I'm welcoming someone I really like, someone who is so kind, and we had such a beautiful connection, Lucy Agolini. She's an expert, a master, an artist in creating amazing mirror boards, and we will talk about visual experience. So tune in, and until then, I wish you good health, success, and lots of happiness. Au revoir.